not be able to facilitate this meeting, I'll request that Mr. Mabasa to facilitate the meeting for us. I'll hand over to him, over to Mr. Mabasa.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, and morning. Baba DG and your team, Swazi, Novisa, as well as there is a gentleman from SABC here. Your surname again? Okay, thanks. Welcome. Oh, and also there's Jillian, also from the media fraternity. Having welcomed you, the chair has asked me to chair for the reason that she has just alluded to, that she is not well today. But as we have the agenda before us, and what we will do, I will ask the DG to introduce his team. Over to you, Baba DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I also have a similar problem to the Chairperson of this committee, but I'm going to give it my best shot here. I'm accompanied by Robert Shaw, who heads my office, Mr. Mulife Matsomela, who is our head of HR, and Ms. Swazi Taitai, who is the parliamentary liaison officer. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thanks, DG. We are now at the stage where we will speak to apologies. Mr. Kotze.
Thank you, Chairperson. We've received four apologies, Chairperson. One from Honorable Nyakemba, Honorable Ngonyama, Honorable Singh, and Honorable Holomisa. All indicated that they are busy with constituency work, so they're in the constituents, officer. Thank you, sir.
And if you interpret the attendance, will you say we are correcting according to the rules?
Yes, sir. We do form a quorum, Chair.
Thank you very much. Our next area is a briefing by the Economic Development Department. So we will now hand over to the DG to lead us on this item, the briefing.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Members. Thank you very much for this opportunity to make a presentation on our organizational structure. In this presentation, we are going to look at the regulatory framework to understand exactly how it is that organizational structures in the public service are developed and approved. We're going to talk to the process of finalizing the approved organizational structure in the Economic Development Department. Then we'll look at the actual structure. We'll look at the issue of the funding of the structure. We'll look at the issue of the funded posts. We'll look at the staff complement, the equity status. We're going to talk to the recruitment process and then make some concluding remarks. In terms of the regulatory framework, it is important to understand that the organogram is regulated in terms of the public service regulations, and an executing authority, that is the minister of a particular department, based on the strategic plan of the department, will determine after consultation with the minister. The minister here refers to the Minister for the Public Service and Administration. So after consultation with the Minister for the Public Service and Administration, a particular minister, in this case the Minister of Economic Development, will determine the organizational structure in terms of its core and support functions. So we'll get onto that issue of the consultation on the next slide. I'll explain it further. And then the executing authority, in this case the Minister of Economic Development, will define the post necessary to perform the relevant functions while remaining within the current budget and medium-term expenditure framework of the department. And the post so defined shall constitute the department's approved establishment. And then the minister, in this case, again, for economic development, would be responsible for grading the proposed jobs according to the job evaluation system referred to in part 4 of the public service regulations. So the grading of posts is also a regulated process, the job evaluations. And then engage in the human resource planning in accordance with Regulation 3D with a view to meeting the resulting human resource needs. So human resource planning is also regulated in terms of public service regulations, where a minister would need to take into consideration the strategic requirements of the department in terms of its core functions, what it needs to achieve, the back office required to support that, and then to basically ensure that the necessary skills are in place, and where they're not in place, to develop those necessary skills. So the human resource plan embraces a number of different areas which departments would need to ensure they fulfill in coming up with a kind of organizational structure which is able to drive the strategic priorities of a particular department and ministry. Now, Chapter 3B2A of the Public Service Regulations talks about directives. Directives issued in terms of Section 33E of the Act shall specify which determinations on the organizational structure of the department shall be subject to consultation with the minister. And for purpose of such consultation, the information to be supplied shall be set out in such a directive. Now, the directive that has been issued in this regard basically specifies that the top three tiers, that is Director General, Deputy Director General, and Chief Director, those levels require consultation between a particular minister, a particular executive authority, and the Minister for the Public Service and Administration. So any changes which are made in an organizational structure at those levels need to be consulted with the Minister for the Public Service and Administration. And this was a measure that was put in place in more recent history, in 2007, I believe it was. And it was in response to discussions held at cabinet level and consulted with the various premiers, where there were concerns that you had the emergence of top-heavy structures and positions being created which could not legitimately be construed to be part of the strategic requirements of a department in terms of what it needed to be delivered. So that's why there was a decision that in terms of the top three levels, there would need to be consultation. Anything below that, any minister or executing authority has the powers to make changes without consulting the Minister for the Public Service and Administration. The consultation takes place around the top three levels. So I thought it important just to give a clear understanding of that particular requirement in terms of the public service regulations and the directives that can be issued in terms of those. Now, getting back to the Economic Development Department, I think it's important to understand, again, the specific dynamics around the creation of the department. We all know it's a new department, a department created out of nothing, which distinguishes it from a number of other departments that were created post the elections in 2009, where departments were split and functions were transferred and a new department was created. In this case, the department was started from scratch. And during the early days of the department, a strategic plan was prepared by the minister and the fledgling staff that was in place at the time. And there was a process of developing an organizational structure. That whole process was coordinated at the time by a task team led by the Department of Public Service and Administration and the National Treasury, where all new departments were kind of taken through a process and a timetable was set up within which they needed to come up with organizational structures. Now, I think it's important to say this because at the time, there were no clear budgets in place for new departments. So the department or the minister basically was faced with the challenge of aligning a structure to a strategy without having clarity exactly around the budget that would have been allocated. And because it was a completely new department and it involved the establishment of a whole new establishment, including those three upper levels, there had to be consultation between the Minister for Economic Development and the Minister for Public Service and Administration. So the new minister came in, the new emerging department engaged in a national process, which all new departments were engaging with, came up with a strategic plan, came up with a structure and consulted with the Minister for the Public Service and Administration. And the approved structure, the structure that Minister Patel approved in consultation with the Minister for the Public Service and Administration, consists of 265 posts. Now, moving on to that organizational structure, this just deals with the top structure, where you have the Director General, Office of the Director General, and then the various branches: Economic Policy Development, Economic Planning and Coordination, Economic Development, Social Dialogue, and then you have the Chief Directorate Corporate Services, the Office of the Chief Financial Officer, and the Director Internal Audit. So that's sort of the top structure there. And what we're going to do now is go through program by program. And talk to the functions and then indicate how the functions are aligned with the strategy and the structure. So program one, which all departments have, is a program that deals with administration, and the functions here are pretty standard across the public service, where you have the provision of strategic support and administrative service to the minister and deputy minister. And that is support in the area of engagements with cabinet, parliament, government at national, provincial, and local levels, government entities, SOEs. So obviously in our case it's the various agencies which fall within the purview of the Ministry for Economic Development. And then engagements with international economic agencies, foreign economic representatives, stakeholders including social partners, communities, the media, and the public. And then you also have the support which goes to the head of the department, the strategic support and administrative service, which entails strategic advice and support on legislation, policies, policy alignment and coordination, ensuring compliance regarding planning and reporting requirements, supporting the department's participation in the cluster system, support to the ministry and branches on operational and administrative matters, ensuring that there is effective document flow in the department, and providing internal audits and risk management services. Then also you have the provision of operational administrative support to the department in terms of your various corporate services, legal services, human resource management, information technology services, financial management and related services, and then communication and events management services. So this is the basic structure that you'll find in any public service department across the entire public service, national and provincial. Now, basically what this does, because the question came up last time, is this looking at the budget program structure. So this is not sort of an organogram per se, but it's depicted in an organogram form, but it's showing the structure of the program, the program budget structure. So program one, its purpose is to render an effective support and administration to the minister, deputy, and minister and department. And then you have the various sort of sub-programs, how the money is divided under that program. So a portion goes to the ministry, a portion goes to the office of the DG, a portion goes to the office of the chief financial officer, a portion goes to corporate services, and a portion goes to the directorate of internal audit. Program two, again, here we talking to the functions and, you know, how the budget supports those functions. The coordination of the implementation of the growth path, and here the focus is on developing papers and policy proposals, holding policy platforms, consultation with departments, municipalities, various public entities and state-owned enterprises, the development of economic policies and sector strategies, which focus on the identification of macro and microeconomic policy options, the outline and analysis of future powers of the economy, and the quantitative analysis of the likely impact of policy options. So what will the impact of policy option be on various macroeconomic issues, for example, and microeconomic issues. Then the promotion of broad-based black economic empowerment, and here the focus is on ensuring the meaningful participation of the majority in the economy, transforming and mainstreaming the second economy, that is developing policies to transform the second economy activities, and the establishment of an economic development institute to provide a platform for economic researchers and practitioners and to provide analysis of data collected by the state and other institutions. So again, these refer to the various sub-programs which fall within the overarching program, Program 2, Economic Policy Development. And here again we have the depiction of this, where we have a program, a budget program, economic policy development, with a purpose to develop economic policy, and then we have the various sub-programs, growth path, economic policy, triple BEE, second economy, and the Economic Development Institute. Program three focuses on economic planning and coordination. And the overview of the functions embraces the development of sector, spatial, and national economic plans. So developing economic plans for South Africa, promoting the development of economic development action plans, particularly for key and distressed areas, building the coherence of provincial and local economic development plans, promotion of economic development in the major sectors of the economy. And then the promotion of investment for economic development, where here we're focusing on the provision of oversight and strategic direction for the development finance institutions, the IDC, KULA, and SAMAF, and channeling and directing public and, where feasible and appropriate, private investment into economic development. Continuing with these functions and sub-programs, promotion of competitiveness for trade and decent work. And this focuses very much on oversight of the policy and strategic direction of the economic regulatory bodies, the Competition Commission, Competition Tribunal, and the International Trade and Administration Commission. The promotion of African and regional economic development, engagement with international agencies and multilaterals, and the pursuit of economic opportunities within the major economic groupings, which would include the BRICS, the EU, obviously the AU, and any other bilateral processes, as we recently had under the leadership of the Deputy President with the United States of America then. The next function would be leveraging on state budgeting, financing, and procurement processes, involving research and analysis on the government's developmental programs and processes to ensure alignment with the new growth path, to identify opportunities for improving local procurement and production. And as we know, a lot of the effort here has been focusing on working with the Treasury and DTI on amending the regulations to the Triple PFA. and then growing the green economy, where we focus on identification, development and support projects, incentives and other measures to promote industries that create jobs and have low or no carbon emissions in energy, agriculture, manufacturing, the service sectors and tourism as well. And here the depiction of this budget program to promote economic planning and coordination, spatial sector and national economic planning, investment for economic development, competitiveness for trade and decent work, economic development, state budgeting and financing and procurement processes, and then the green economy. The fourth program is economic development and dialogue. And if we look at the functions, the first is leading national social dialogue and implementing strategic frameworks. This involves consultation on and coordination of government's policy input and contributions to social dialogue and economic development matters, negotiating national economic development and decent work pacts, coordination of the implementation of framework agreements, and then engagement in sector and workplace dialogue. That would be the next function, which involves also the development of partnership agreements in key sectors and workplaces. And then capacity building for economic development, which is the promotion of research output and knowledge among social partners through the establishment and administration of the Social Partner Fund, the convening of an economic advisory panel, the creation and coordination of knowledge networks, and convening an annual economic development conference. And it will be held in May for the current period. And then fostering productivity, entrepreneurship, and innovation. The development of a policy framework for the increasing productivity, enhancing innovation, and entrepreneurship. And again, here we have the depiction of this budget program and the sub-programs, national social dialogue and strategic framework, sector and workplace social dialogue, capacity building for economic development, productivity, entrepreneurship, and innovation. I think what's important maybe to point out at this point in the presentation would be that we have really, in terms of the previous presentations and engagements we've had with the committee, an alignment between what is articulated in the strategic plan, in the annual performance plan, with the budget structure. So that alignment is there. I think basically where we're going to talk more about as well is the issue of the budget allocations and the implication for the structure per se. Now, if we look at the summary of the structure per program, we see that program administration, program one, has 86 posts. The program two, economic policy development, has 68 posts. Program economic planning and coordination has 81 posts. And program economic development and social dialogue has 30 posts. That makes up the total of 265 posts. And we have the proportions per program. And one of the issues we've spoken about in the past is concerns about the ratios of administrative to core line function staff. So actually, in terms of the approved structure, we have a ratio of two line staff to one support staff. So that is the actual ratio we have in the approved organogram. And for a policy department, the balance there is not really that problematic. Now, in terms of the funding of the structure, I think it's important for us to point out that the structure itself was approved before the indicative budget was in place. So in September, the structure was concluded. There was a process of approval in September of 2009. With the establishment of the new department, and then the clear budget allocations came in December 2009, And these are the allocations for the Economic Development Department, not for the entire vote, because as we know, the entire vote includes the transfers to the various agencies as well. So we're just focusing here on the allocations to the Economic Development Department. And we see that we have a scenario of approximately 60% of the budget being allocated for personnel across the MTEF period. That's the original MTEF period. Of course, now we have an additional year. Now, if we look at funded posts, because now that we've actually had the allocations, we need to look at the funded posts. I think it's quite important to look at the asterisk that we've put into the slide here, because the figures are estimates. They vary according to the levels of staff recruited. So to determine the funded posts, one has to also determine which posts one is going to fill, because obviously if you're filling at the top level, you're going to fill less posts than if you're filling at the bottom level, where you know the salaries are lower, so you can fill more posts. So that's why it's not 100% scientific. We're going on the basis of what the department needs in order to do the job at hand and to put all the necessary compliance requirements in place in the back office to comply with the requirements of National Treasury, the DPSA, and obviously ultimately the Auditor General that will audit whether or not we're meeting all the various compliance requirements. So these are what we've put into the strategic plan and discussed with the committee before, where we are very sensitive to coming up with the most favorable ratio that we can of core line staff, or front office staff if you like, and back office staff. We don't want to have a department that's only got a back office that complies with the requirements of National Treasury, the DPSA, and so on, and therefore it receives clean audits. We obviously want to receive clean audits, but we need to balance those requirements with the requirements to actually implement the programs that we are accountable to the Minister and to Parliament for implementing. So that's why in our strategic plan we try to put down particular kinds of numbers where we are trying to restrict the back office staff. And basically, this slide depicts the number of posts that we have allocated for funding in our planning processes for the medium-term period. So for the financial year that just completed, we looked at 98 posts in terms of our personnel allocation. In the current financial year that we just entered, we're looking at 129 posts. And in the next financial year, we're looking at 142 posts. Now, what we do in this slide is we look at the current situation, the financial year that's just ended, and we look at what we've been able to achieve in terms of the target of 98. We were able to bring in 79 people, although it is true that we have had 13 new staff members joining from the 1st of April. So we actually ended up in the region of 92. We didn't quite hit the target, but we were able to come pretty close to it. And we also have discussed with the committee before the whole issue of permanent posts and contract posts. And the reason why we have used contract positions, and ultimately with a big focus on ensuring that we fill with permanent appointments. This slide is just looking at the different salary levels in the public service from the head of department level. Strictly speaking, all heads of department are on contract, but anyway, it's not contract in the way in which other contracts are. And then we have one DDG in position, full on a permanent basis. We have 10 chief directors, permanent, 7 on contract, directors, 4 permanent, 4 on contract, deputy directors, 5 permanent, 2 on contract. That's on the level 12. At level 11, deputy director, there's 5 permanent and 9 on contract, and so on. So that deals with the different levels and the permanent and contract positions and then the total complement that we have in place. We have looked at the equity status before. This is the equity status as at the 22nd of March. So we have agreed with the committee that in the area of disability we've not done particularly well, although we've done better since the last time because we have done some recruitment in this area, and there are plans to certainly improve in this area. At the SMS level, we also have not an ideal scenario because we're aiming for 50-50. So we have 56% male and 44% female. But overall, we aren't doing too badly on gender equity, 43% male, 57% female. So this slide gives a more elaborate breakdown just in terms of white, colored, Indian, African staff, disability, and so on, and is there for interrogation by the committee. On the recruitment process, we are very active in that area, and as indicated, we do need to engage in job evaluation processes. Before we can fill any of the posts, we do need to evaluate them. We have evaluated 96 positions through the assistance of the DPSA. Some of the positions will have more posts attached to them, but they're in order to meet our target in terms of our actual funded posts that we want to fill, we will have to do some evaluations during the course of this financial year we're in. We have 28 positions in the line function that have been advertised and are being filled. So we've done shortlisting, we're doing the competency assessments, we're going into interviews this month around those, and then we will submit for approval. And then on the recruitment side, we are looking at an executive search for some key critical posts that we have identified. We do need to recognize that there is a shortage of economists with the kind of qualifications and quality that we're looking for in South Africa. So we obviously have to try and be competitive in the market and use available facilities to assist us find suitable people. And that would be both from inside the public service and from outside the public service and public sector more broadly. And we have also been in contact with the Ministry for Women, Youth and Disabilities to create a database that will assist us to fulfill our targets around people with disabilities. So in conclusion, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we are looking at using the funding we have for 129 posts in the forthcoming financial, well, it's actually in the year we're in now, from 1st of April. During the current MTEF, we would only be able to fund the approved structure if we were able to secure an increase in the baseline. So we would need an increase in the baseline in order to be able to fill our approved structure. We're very cognizant of the ratios between administrative and operational staff, as well as the ratio of senior management to middle management. But we will continue recruiting within the budgetary constraints which have been presented. Thank you very much.
Thanks, DG. Are there any additions that the department will want to make? Any comments? Okay. Let's now observe the members that want to make input. Let me note Dr. Ravi, Mr. Marais, Babutuli, Chairperson. Let's go for it, Dr. Ravi.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Professor. I wonder whether we shouldn't wait till he gets some tea before I ask him the question. He's busy just getting some tea. I'm prepared to wait till he's filled up his glass of tea, Chairman.
Let's pause. But let me say that let's all be free to pick up tea as we go on with the meeting. But for your part, yes, let's pause for a second for the DG.
Sorry about that.
Thank you, Chairman. Professor, now I think it's you. I'd like to sort of felicitate you. I think you've achieved a lot already. I think you're out of the starting blocks. But I think, I'd like to ask you a specific question on Program 4, the Economic Development Dialogue. You mentioned that you are planning an annual economic development conference, and the first one is due in May. Have you decided on a topic and the venue where it's going to be held, and what will the approximate cost be of this particular conference? And then the second thing is that you also mentioned there that you are going to foster a policy regarding productivity, entrepreneurship, and innovation. Are you planning? I know some countries have got an annual sort of allocation or an annual prize which they allocate to the entrepreneur or the innovator of the year. Are you thinking of following that particular pattern as well? I just want his comments on that as well. Thank you, mate. Thank you, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. DG, just a very quick comment on the equity status. I'm glad that you have now appointed one person with a disability, although it be on the lowest level. And I will certainly look at with anticipation people with disabilities on high levels as well. I wonder whether you can give us an indication of the nature of the disability of that person that was appointed. Then secondly, I just want to mention that where you have approached the ministry for a database, obviously the national bodies, DEFSA, the National Council of People with Physical Disabilities, Blind South Africa, is obviously places to approach as well. They have got databases as well. Then right in the beginning, and I know it's probably a repetition of what I've asked in the past, as you've explained the different programs, I've asked myself now, is this a duplication? It sounds like a duplication of what National Treasury is doing, of what DGI is doing, of what the planning department is doing. For instance, broad-based black economic empowerment, it's a core function of DGI in terms of policy, in terms of legislation, in terms of scorecards, in terms of charters and all those kind of things. And the one concern I've got, and I know I've also asked that and I've mentioned that in the past, if it's only an advisory body, if it's only a promotional body, because there's a lot of promotions going to be done, a lot of advice that, you know, what, how different departments must be responded and how they should do this, and, but there's no quantitative measure to say this is the effect of what you have been done on GDP. This is the effect of what you've done directly on job creation. So to a large extent, you are dependent on other people to set measurable targets and then to say this is what we have achieved in terms of, for instance, you know, the road to the 5 million jobs. And if there's a direct correlation where you can quantify and qualify your role, then it most certainly can enhance your position of justifying 265 jobs posts. Otherwise, it sounds like, and I'm not meaning it in a derogative way, a talk shop. If it's just a talk shop, and if it's just talking about this, if it's just promotion about this, if it's just advice in terms of that, but the others may just feel, I mean, whether they're doing that or not, or achieving that or not, is none here, no there. So that is just a concern of mine of how you will be dealing with that and how we can justify in a credible way in the future increasing the department and really seeing a direct line between what you are doing and what is achieved in the economy. Thank you very much.
Comrade Ntuli. Thanks, Chairperson, and I'd also like to welcome the presentation by the DG. Chairperson, I just want to check. I'm thinking of the, they call it social economy or second economy. I'm thinking about the stock fairs, the promotion of the stock fairs in the townships. Have we got any work done in that area according to the policy? What are we doing? Can we say something tangible to say this is the we have done this to promote stock fairs and rural skills in the townships and in the villages? Have we done any work on that one or proposed one? When we talk about the social dialogue, is it different, or I would like to pose this question like this, at NEDLAC, where you find that there is also social dialogue, how does your social dialogue differ from that one which is done at NEDLAC, or is it going parallel? Chairperson, I want to check the department when it comes to vacancy rates in the department. As the economic development, what is our role to the other departments to check? We are talking about creation of employment, and we find that in the departments there is a huge vacancy rate, and this question, it's a pertinent question. We always, previous years, we do ask this: why do we have vacancies, particularly funded ones, in the departments, while we are talking about unemployment, we are talking about we have to create jobs, but the department, we've got vacancy rates and they are not filled for a long time. I want to check what is our or your department's role in that sphere. Lastly, Chair, on page 16, we've got a percentage. I was trying to, what is it for? That percentage, 32, 20, 31, page 16, yeah. Slide, or is it slide or page? Yeah.
Slide 16, page 8.
Oh, okay. If you can explain that percentage, 32, 20, 31, because I was trying to say, is it a percentage of the total, or if you can expatiate on that one. Thanks.
Correct, Coleman.
Thanks, Chair. I didn't hear the first question. The questions as asked by Dr. Rabi and the first question asked by Mr. Mare. So you'll pardon me if I repeat some of the questions because I was out. Chair, I just want to find out the 2009 structure is approved. My understanding is it was approved as together with the stretch plan, the 5-year stretch plan. That is the alignment that we're talking about. Am I correct? If I'm correct and following the legal framework that the DG spoke to, aren't we supposed to be reviewing every year? Especially because that's the whole, the 265, my understanding is that it's for the whole five years. If the staff establishment is approved for economic development with the to achieve the strategic imperatives of the department for the 5 year, for the next 5 years. But then every year you have to review. And the reviewer would include, one, host as, for instance, filled, or vacancies as filled, and the new, the reviewer of the stretch plan, because you might have thought you'd do 1, 2, 3 according to the projections, but then you find that you don't achieve those things, and then you review. And that then would also require that you review your organogram or your staff establishment for that financial year. So the one for the 2011-12 financial year is 129 posts. What I want to know, it might sound technical, is it in addition to the 98? Or is it standalone? That's what it's a review of what transpired in the first in the 2010-11. Take into consideration what the DG has alluded to when he was explaining the process towards, you know, approval and all that. It was clear that then the department did not have its own allocation, and the baseline therefore was affected, DG, if I'm correct, by the fact that you were still new, dependent on trade and industry, and therefore it couldn't have been a correct analysis by then. Am I correct? If I'm correct, then I would want to ask the DG if he feels the staff establishment as it is now will help him and the minister to achieve what he has envisioned for the department. My second question is related to the allocation of posts per program. The department is an economic development department. The allocation of posts per program doesn't seem to talk to that, did you? You're more focused on planning and coordination. And policy development, is it correct? Because the actual economic development issues, I don't think they're catered for, because in terms of your plan, you have only planned for this financial year to appoint 14 persons, and the same question will arise as to, is it in addition to the 9 or is it outside the 9 of last financial year? And therefore, I would ask whether with this type of, I think that would be related to what I think is Mr. Marais who was asking, whether you will be able to provide us with the information that would begin to analyze the economic outcomes for the country, economic development outcomes, because that is very important in as far as some of us are concerned. Lastly, the recruitment process, DG. I want to agree with Member Ntuli. The recruitment process seemed to be taking long, and last year I did ask this question also, whether was it this related to the process of verifying, or what you call here, what you refer to here as the competency assessments, yes. Because I know that could take a lot of time. And therefore, I would want to ask again, what is the turnaround time in terms of your recruitment process up to the filling of a particular post? Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Chair.
Are there other questions? We will take the second round after getting the responses. Mr. DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'll run through the questions and then also ask Mr. Matsumela to fill in here and there. Firstly, on the conference, this conference, maybe I should wait until Honorable Ravi comes back for that one, so that he can also listen to the answer and see if it satisfies the requirements. I think Honorable Marais has made important points that we need to also go beyond the newly created ministry to look at established organizations like DEPSA, and to put their, to draw off their databases as well. So I think that we take as constructive advice and criticism. I think the issue of duplication, there may be areas where there's an apparent duplication, but there's a lot of areas, particularly in the macroeconomic policy field, that where there isn't really duplication and where there is acknowledgement of the role we need to play. So, for example, if we look at triple BEE issues that we're focusing on is very much within the context of the growth part and how we use the opportunities of triple BEE and how we refine the policy where necessary to ensure that we broaden out the base and that we create employment opportunities as well as strengthen the small business and micro enterprise environment through the various growth path initiatives. So I think in terms of our working relationships with the DTI, there is an acknowledgement. Our minister participates on the Triple BEE Council and recently made a presentation there on the new growth path and Triple BEE, which was very, very well received. I think a very important question asked by the Honorable Marais and the chairperson is around the quantitative effect. So are we just doing sort of the nice to do's, or are we really going to be involved in understanding the quantitative effect? Now, it's important to say up front that monitoring and evaluation is very much part of implementation. Monitoring and evaluation is not abstract research. Monitoring evaluation is action-oriented research where we want to establish, on the one hand, accountability, on the other hand, lessons for improving. Now, we are leading a process together with the presidency, performance monitoring evaluation, where we want to take a particular system which has been developed by the ILO, the Dynamic Social Accounting Matrix System, and adapt it in order to measure the employment impact of government policies and programs. And we right now are involved in this important initiative, which will place us at the center of monitoring and evaluation of the impact of the various policy initiatives articulated in the growth path and the impact which they have on employment creation, on economic growth, on competition policy, on triple BEE, etc., etc. So I do think that through this intervention that we are currently involved in, we are beginning to find our space within the whole implementation process of macro and microeconomic policy. So I think that is an exciting initiative. We're looking to produce our first report for Cabinet by August, and obviously the system will be refined over time and ultimately become a very critical tool both for the executive and parliament in determining the impact of various government programs. And I think this arose out of a necessity which we identified in our various engagements with departments, that they weren't really applying their mind to the whole issue of employment impact in particular. So when we tried to look at numbers, employment numbers, direct and indirect, in terms of particular sector departments and the impact which they're making through their various policy initiatives, we found that it was difficult to get accurate and reliable information that was consistent across the various sectoral departments. And hence an agreement that we come up with a coordinated approach together with performance monitoring and evaluation, which in the medium and long term will hopefully allow us to answer the precise questions that have been raised by the Chairperson and Honourable Marais on the quantitative impact of our programs. Just to indicate in response to Honourable Ntuli's questions, the second economy and the social economy, they're not really the same thing, although there's obviously an overlap. But the social economy is focusing on the not-for-profit sector of the economy, community trusts, stock fells, which have been mentioned, cooperatives, and so on and so forth. Certainly, through the social economy initiatives, which we are supporting in various areas, one through a partnership that we've entered into with the University of Johannesburg to establish a social economy academy, which will provide training facilities for those engaged in cooperative activities. And also through SAMATH, we are certainly looking at Stockfels in particular, and SAMATH is involved in the funding of Stockfels. So I think very clearly it is an area of priority. We want to look at all various initiatives within the social economy and second economy that can promote and sustain livelihoods. And that is certainly one area. There's obviously other community initiatives that over time we will need to look at as well, such as burial societies and so on, which I think are also very important activities within the terrain of the second economy, and see whether or not we are in a position to support those, either through the initiative of the training academy or any other particular programs that we are able to establish over time. Our social dialogue does not attempt to substitute for NEDLAC. It aims to complement NEDLAC. There are obviously particular social dialogue processes within the framework of NEDLAC. So when it came, for example, to the recrafting of the regulations on procurement, that's a process, for example, that we took through NEDLAC, not necessarily as EDD alone, but together with the National Treasury and the DTI. But the social dialogue is also trying to say NEDLAC is the national body which facilitates social dialogue. We want to go into sectors and workplaces. We want to look at particular companies in distress, say through the framework agreement. So if we get an indication from the Eastern Cape that there are certain factories which are under threat for whatever the reasons may be, we would want to try and generate a process of dialogue which would allow us to come up with a solution based at the workplace level that would save jobs. So the social dialogue, yes, it engages at the national level through the NEDLAC process, but we also then want to go down to particular workplaces or even sectors. So we might look at a particular sector which is undergoing difficulties and see how we could intervene in such a sector. Even if it's not undergoing difficulties, there are other policy objectives that we might want to pursue within a sector that would promote local production, for example. So we might want to go into a particular sector, talk to all the relevant players, the social partners, and see whether we could come up with a sector accord which would promote local production, preserve jobs, and create new jobs in the process. In as much as the vacancy rates and the role of EDD across the public service is concerned, in parallel and intersection with this other initiative I've spoken about, the DISAM, the Dynamic Social Accountry Matrix, Cabinet has also taken a decision around the filling of vacancies in the public service. So there is an initiative of performance monitoring evaluation and the DPSA currently, and it intersects with this other program, which is where we come in to make sure that all vacancies are filled across the public service. The percentages on slide 16 are really just the proportions per program. So if we look at the approved structure, 32% of the staff on that approved structure would fall in administration program. So, you know, those would be the support staff. And then in economic policy development, you would have 20% of the total. Economic planning, 31% of the total. And dialogue, 11% of the total. Whether or not there's an adequate balance, which is what the chairperson has asked, I think is an important question. I don't think it's necessarily a straightforward answer, and it's linked to the whole issue of whether we think that the current establishment and the establishment as we are filling it based on our allocation will be able to achieve everything that is envisaged. I think that is in a sense linked to you know, the core thrust of that question, which is about the review. First of all, to clarify, the 129 will not be over and above. The 129 will be the total. So we're going to add to the 98 another 21 and bring it, another 31 and bring it up to 129. So yes, I think it's correct to say that the 265 was envisaged. And where we had an out of alignment process, if I may put it this way, is that even in the case where you had the existing departments, new ministers coming in, those departments had already gone through a planning process. Okay. So technically, the strategic plan was presented by the minister in Parliament in March, I believe, of 2010. But prior to that, obviously, to become functional as a department, there was a need to put in place a strategic plan. So it didn't necessarily go through formal processes per se, But a strategic plan was crafted in order to develop the organogram to make all the necessary plans for the department to become functional. And yes, it's correct to say, as the chair has said, that the original intention there was for a five-year window. And hence, we still think that we need to prove that in practice we are able to implement plans, implement programs, and show that we can, or show our effectiveness, if I can put it that way, as a department. And then begin to pressurize for an increase in the baseline, which will allow us to secure the necessary funding for the approved organogram. So that really is the current approach that we are pursuing. Because otherwise we would maybe need to try and scale back. Now, I do think that the achievements given the staffing size have been not too modest, particularly because we have, under the leadership of the minister, had approval of the new growth path and seen the new growth path in effect become the core priority for the government for this year that we are in. And I think that is no mean achievement. So we feel that we need to maintain the original envisaged structure in order, as we proceed, and if we're able to proceed on the same basis of effectiveness, to bid for increases in the baseline over the five-year period. So hopefully that explains why we are where we are in this in the structure, the constraints that we have, and the way in which we see it going forward. Whether or not we've got the right balance, I think that is an important question. Are we more focused on planning? I think inevitably in all government departments, there are various requests that come in. There are requests that come from provinces, there are requests that come from municipalities, there are also requests that come from other national departments. And in order to manage those requests, which may be interventions to unblock a process at a provincial level or at a national level. So a province might be working on a particular project and they would want our intervention, maybe at the level of the DTI or National Treasury, to assist ensuring that their plans are translated into budgets that are allocated and so on. We are currently housing people who deal with a lot of those issues in the planning branch. And that would explain why maybe the planning branch, even in the way we're filling posts, is growing at a faster level. The recruitment process in the public service is long. I think together with the issues on disability, including the specific question posed by Honourable Murray, Mr. Matsomela will also engage in those. And I don't think we should necessarily be defensive, but maybe, you know, put some of the facts on the table. We know that the average time to fill a post in the public service is 6 months. 6 months is certainly too long for our department, given the challenges we face. So I don't think we want to necessarily say we're targeting that. So we agree, we need to speed up. I wouldn't necessarily want to blame verification of qualifications, competency testing. They are factors which prolong the process, and they are all compliance requirements. We do need to, as a matter of compliance, ensure that we, you know, verify qualifications, criminal records, etc., before we take people onto our employ. I think we stretched in a number of ways, because as we also build our HR capability, there's a lot of administration issues that we need to deal with in terms of taking over some of the functions from the DTI, in terms of developing our human resource planning capability, our human resource development capability, in terms of dealing with staff issues as they come up along the way, as well as recruitment being one of the key administrative functions that we're currently dealing with. So I think we should take that as a valid criticism, and as we increase our staff within the human resource environment in the department, we should really speed up and try and set ourselves some targets and share our targets with Parliament, and then share with Parliament whether or not we're able to meet our targets. So I think that is a valid issue which we need to take on board and do it in the manner which I suggested. Honourable Rabi, I held my powder dry just in order to answer your questions. The conference will be focusing on the new growth path. It will be the focus of the conference, and we will bring together a wide range of players, social partners, academic experts, to look at various aspects of the implementation of the new growth path. The costs we are obviously trying to limit. We aren't going for a fancy venue at the moment. It looks like we'll be holding the conference at Birchwood, which is a more modest conference venue. We're looking at a budget which would not go too much above $1.2 million. But I think over time, obviously, as we implement it, we would look at more accurate costing for the event. So we are sensitive to the issues that are raised in the question. On productivity at the moment, I think we can take that as something, as a suggestion almost, because at the moment we're not necessarily looking at a particular ward like the one you've mentioned, but I think it's something we can certainly consider going forward. I think what we are quite interested in doing, and we, because of the staffing situation, we haven't managed to really get on top of it, but what we really want to look at is productivity accords. So we want to look at it starting probably at a workplace level to see whether we can come up with productivity accords, because we believe that that will obviously enhance competitiveness, it will preserve jobs, and achieve all the objectives that I think all of us are looking for. So that's where our initial focus is going to be. We do have someone in place now who is hopefully going to be able to take us forward in this area. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, I'm just going to ask Mr. Matsomera to fill in some of the gaps. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Members and Chairperson. The only area I think that you just covered most of the questions that have been posed, I can only pick up any small questions that I think they haven't been touched, is the nature of the disability of the person. The person is currently using the crutches to walk. But the point we have taken, the point that we should actually try to cover a larger area in terms of the agencies and institutions that deals with disabilities as well, and also to try to also look at the higher level, not at the lower level, in terms of disability. It's one thing that we will take and look at it. In relation to the question of the structure as well, the question was posed by the Honourable Chairperson that shouldn't we, 265 is a sort of a bigger structure over a particular period. On an annual basis, shouldn't we review the structure as such? We are looking to do that, but then also within the budgets that we have to be able to identify the positions that we should be able to fill in the current financial year. And I think that's what we need to do on a yearly basis until such time that we're able to get money to fund the whole structure. Thanks, Chairperson.
No further follow-ups in responding. Okay, let's take another round of questions. I'm noting Comrade Sopetse, and Kwame Gwalaza. In that order, your turn.
Thank you, Chair. DG, in your response, you've already alluded to the question I was going to ask in relation to vetting your new appointees. But still, one would like to pursue the question just for you to be a bit more explicit. Like, can you give us a word that in the new appointees, you didn't appoint people who left other departments or organizations due to corruption or inefficiency? And with the current and the new appointees as well, how would you, or how often would you do vetting for you to take precautionary measures and minimize some financial risk?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. On slide 9, the, I would like to know, when are you planning to establish that economic development institute? That's the first question. The second question, Chair, the EPWP seems to be missing in the presentation, and I think it's important. And I thought it would probably lie under Program 3 on slide 12. I was wondering why it is not part of that, because it's critical that it be coordinated as well under this department. Thirdly, Chairperson, I want to, you know, the question of stock fails and burial societies has been mentioned. I want to suggest that we broaden that and begin to speak about the emerging financial sector. If you like, the emerging second economy financial sector. Because all of these small financial sector activities are taking place in the second economy, and they're lying all over. They are not coordinated yet. They can play a very significant role in terms of promoting and encouraging savings, in terms of them playing an increasing role in investment for sustainability and for growth, but also in terms of creating jobs as well. And I thought we need to just broaden that and speak of it as an emerging financial sector or a second economy financial emerging financial sector economy financial sector. And probably place it as well under slide 12, or rather program 3, just broadly. But also link it to the role, for instance, the post bank has got to play, because the post bank would be the closest to the people. I want us also to tease out the question of encouraging the creation of cooperative banks and under the same idea. I'm not sure, Chairperson, whether we just in addition we should also consider that emerging financial sector as one of the issues for social dialogue under your program 4, just so that you formalize it and it's put on the radar screen of economic development. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Corrie Coleman.
Thanks, Chair. I didn't know whether I should ask this question or not, DJ, as a follow-up to what you have already responded to, but it's in relation to contract workers. I know I did ask this question before, and my main worry is around, you know, an issue around retainment of your knowledgeable and people who are well informed with issues within the department, for lack of a better, you know, phrasing of that sentence. But then what I'm looking at here in terms of the staff complement, you know, focus still on economic development issue, which is to me very critical and crucial. You have employed currently 6 temporary people actually on contract. You know, I'm going to ask the question based on the experience for government, wherein the people would come in, gather information, you know, knowledge, and then where you need them most, then, you know, exit the system. I just want to ask whether these people that you've contracted currently, are they not prepared to stay permanently? And if not, how is the process and of you know, recruiting these people? I know you said you have, there are very few people in the whole, you know, economy, in the market actually, to find who are good with economic issues. I'm not too sure of your strategy on getting such people. I've heard you saying in terms of people with disabilities, this is how you are looking at, you know, getting such people. But in terms of skills in relation to Program 4, you haven't, not only Program 4, but all other programs that are important in terms of your work. How are you intending to really get such people? Is the institute going to help you, or what is it that what is it that you're planning to mitigate the situation that you're finding yourself in? And your retention strategy, perhaps, so that you don't have many people come, you know, exiting your system because there are new ventures coming in, but how are you ensuring that you attract people to stay so that they can continue? Otherwise you get crippled, because if they leave at the time when we really need them. Thanks. I can't even hear myself because my ears are blocked. I hope what I'm saying is making sense.
It is.
Yes, thank you.
Let me also throw in 2 or 3 questions. DG, if up to now, if we assumed that the AG's office is auditing the department's progress, are there areas which you think, from the point of view of the AG, you will fall short, or will you say you are still on track? That's one. And then on slide 16, page 8, along the program policy, along the economic policy development, that 68, does it not translate to 26 instead of 20%? If we can just check that. And then my last question would be, to what degree
can we say the budget has a bias towards the previously disadvantaged? To what degree can we say this tool does seek to correct that anomaly so that we don't find, as we go down the road, we are missing that main objective? The last one is a follow-up on what has been asked on cooperatives. Does the budget see cooperatives as a major player in budgetary figures? Because there is a danger that if we don't consciously see it that way, it may remain at the periphery, whereas it is also one of the instruments of correcting the anomaly, anomaly of our economic structure. And over to you, DG.
Thank you very much. Okay, I'll make some observations, and then Mr. Matsumela will also engage. I hope someone will do that calculation, because I can't note all the questions and do the calculation to see if we got that right. But we'll check on that one as well. certainly in the vetting process, there has been the odd occasion where we've got some kind of a negative report, and we've had to follow up. But once someone is appointed, of course, a negative report would have to be very substantial. So we've never had a substantial negative report which would show someone had a criminal record or they forged a qualification. But obviously when it comes to issues of performance, which was part of Mayor Sotetsi's question, then we need to make a follow-up. And there have been occasions where we have to follow up with someone, indicating to them that we have received a negative report and therefore on a performance level we would have certain expectations. But we've never had a report which would indicate someone left because of corruption per se. And Mr. Matsumela may want to expand upon that. The vetting process is really a once-off process, although obviously for the senior management there is an annual declaration of interests which must be filled out and checked. So in a sense, for the senior management, you've got an ongoing process of some kind of a vetting at some level of things. But then we have to put in place necessary processes, like a fraud prevention plan, for example, which would put us in a position to be able to identify if there are any fraudulent activities going on in the department. So some of them would not be uncovered through vetting per se. They'd be uncovered through other risk management and fraud prevention processes that we would be implementing on an ongoing basis. But I think Mr. Matsumela may also elaborate on that particular one. I think this year we're going to have to obviously confront the issue of the Institute and to see whether we are going to be in a position to establish it during this year. On the Expanded Public Works Program being missing from the presentation, I think it's true that it's missing from the presentation, but it'll form a very important part of that dynamic social accounting matrix system that we're talking about, because in the area of government employment, both in terms of the creation of work opportunities and full-time equivalents, we need to be very much on top of the impact of the EPWP and the Community Works Program and other similar initiatives in order to ensure that they are able to be successful and we are able to measure their success. We have been more involved in a partnership with Environmental Affairs around the Working for Water program, and particularly a new initiative which we find very exciting, which is to try and sustain Working for Water job opportunities by creating what they call eco-furniture factories. Where you take those red gums that are harvested and you build school desks, tables, furniture for that can be used in other government institutions, for example, hospitals. And in that way, it's not simply work opportunities per se, but hopefully sustainable job creation. Because I think people who occupy those factories will gain a lot of skills, and those factories themselves may be sustainable if government institutions themselves want to procure supplies from them. And in fact, if we're looking at the costs per school desk, for example, we find them highly competitive with respect to the costs of school desks being procured in provinces generally. In fact, a third of the cost, actually. They are very heavy. That's very heavy wood. So that would be the disadvantage. But the actual costs of producing those school desks is cheaper, far cheaper, than what a number of provinces are paying. So we feel this is a very important initiative, and we need to look into the whole supply chain of that initiative to see whether we can ramp it up, get buy-in from education national, education provincially, but I think obviously initially is just to get those factories going and to get the production lines working. So I'm just trying to emphasize that we take these programs very seriously. We're going to quantify them. They're going to be part of the quantification process. So they would come in more under that policy section, which wants to look at the impact of various programs. Then I think we certainly note as something that we ourselves need to take seriously and do more work on around the whole question of broadening the emerging financial sector in the second economy, and all the advantages that the Honourable Member has pointed to in terms of promoting and encouraging savings, in terms of playing an important role in investment for sustainability, growth and job creation. It would be under Program 3. We certainly are going to be looking at the role of the Post Bank in the context of the work we're doing around the merging of the institutions, which we've engaged with before with the committee, as per the State of the Nation address indication that government is considering merging the small business loan book of the IDC, Kula and SAMAF into one institution. Certainly what we've been emphasizing all along is that the microfinance division of that merged institution must be extremely prominent. It must be given a lot of attention. And I think in the process we would have to look at cooperative banks. And the idea of looking at this as an issue for social dialogue, we will look into all of those various aspects. I think those are very important and constructive suggestions which we do need to follow up with. Obviously, SAMAF is already playing within that space, within the second economy, and we have to look at the successes they've had in order to ramp up, but also new initiatives and new learnings, which will hopefully come about through the process I've referred to. It links with the question of the chairperson of today's session, which is whether we are giving enough bias in our budget towards the previously disadvantaged. I think it's not an easy question to answer, because when we do the quantification, we may be in a better position to say whether we are doing that. Because if we just look at the programs, it may appear as though we should be having more money allocated to second economy activities, social economy related activities, the work we're doing in the new growth path around BBBE, et cetera, et cetera. But if we look at the broader impacts on employment creation, and of course I think that is the fundamental developmental objective of everything that this department is doing, and that's employment creation. Then I think that we may come up with a different answer. Obviously, when it comes to actual implementation, that's where we're looking to the agencies, particularly Kula and SAMAP, the new entity, the merged entity, with its various divisions, to bring about the kind of impact that we're looking at on the historically marginalized, not even historically disadvantaged, because I think the Honorable Chair of today's session is also pointing to those that are marginalized. They're historically disadvantaged, but they're also marginalized. And, you know, obviously the interventions in the second economy, social economy, the interventions through SAMAF are fundamental to addressing those particular challenges. So hopefully over time, when we're able to do some of the quantification, we can really stand back and answer that question in a more thorough way. But we do appreciate the question, and we need to think more about that. As well as the focus and attention we're giving to cooperatives. One has tried to indicate how we aim to address that, and certainly we would need to have a ramp up over time around that as well. On the issue of the contract workers, I think it is a question that needs to be repeated over time. Obviously, there are particular processes and regulations and laws that we need to comply with in retaining contract workers. There has to be an open process for all advertised positions, but that would obviously not preclude. We're looking at a lot of these contract workers as a talent pool. I think increasingly one is becoming to appreciate that people we've brought in as assistant directors, deputy directors on contract, and even chief directors, but particularly in that middle management level, we've got a pool of young, talented people that would enhance the equity status of our department as well, that we really need to nourish. And I think coming out of that question, what we need to do, which maybe we haven't done, is to really sort of compile you could call it a database, where we put all these people in, we look at what they've been doing in the department, the length of their contracts, the skills and attributes they have, and how we need to ensure that we retain them. And then engage with the deputy minister and minister around that talent pool, and make sure that in how we advertise, recruit, and retain during this year, we certainly take them into account. So I'm saying the question is forcing us to become more systematic, because we can renew contracts if we deem it fit to renew contracts. But I think the chairperson of the committee is indicating that we really need to focus on retention. So I think that is what we can undertake from our side to do to try and support that process of retention Again, in the area of economic development and social dialogue, we note the issue about the small ratio of permanent to contract workers in that program. And the broader question, will we be able to get the right people? Well, I think we're going to hit and miss. I think it is like that in all organizations of whatever sort. But coming back to that original question, you see, once we've got people in on contract and they prove themselves, we would be crazy not to retain them. This is the ideal opportunity where we see this talent. They understand, some of them are young, they're recent graduates, they understand what we're trying to achieve, they learning as they go along. Those are precisely the people that we need. Getting the finished article is going to be difficult. It's difficult generally in the public service, because often you're getting people who come into promotional jobs. They still need to be nourished and supported in their own personal development. So I think these are all the things the chairperson is asking that we need to really bring a focus about, and we do appreciate that question, and to indicate that a number of those who have come in on contract would certainly be very, very willing to stay. They want to stay. So the ball is in our court, and we just need to be more systematic about how we go about retaining their services and not keep our eye off the ball, suddenly find out that someone's contract's coming to an end and they want to leave. So I think the process that I've mentioned will help us to really keep our eye on the ball. Okay, then on the Auditor General, the Auditor General is more active now. And that means that there are more regular engagements and assessments going along. Where there have been a few red flags raised is in the whole HR area, because obviously we need to spend that HR budget. We need to be recruiting in accordance with the budget allocation, and then we need to ensure that all our HR processes are compliant, that we comply with all the requirements. There's many, many requirements. Some of them I don't see how we're going to comply with, to be frank, strictly compliant. Some of them, though, the AG doesn't pay too much attention to. So, for example, each department is supposed to have a dedicated gender official at a director level reporting to the Director General. Now, given the nature of our department, a small, emerging, knowledge-based institution, where we want to get the right ratio of core staff to administrative staff, we need to keep our eye on the gender ball, but it can't be our priority to hire a director for gender and place it in the office of the Director General, because then we're going to have the office of the Director General becoming the largest office, larger than the actual programs, just as an example. And that impacts on other areas of work as well. So I think what one is indicating is that the HR is an area which we certainly paying attention to in our engagements with the Auditor General. The other area would be in the area of risk management, but we have taken specific interventions to address that. And we are in the process of a risk analysis, and we held a strategic planning meeting last week, and one of the core components of that meeting was a focus on developing the risk strategy. The audit committee, but now we have appointed an audit committee. The audit committee has met, and we will be having an induction process shortly for the audit committee. They've recognized that we face very specific challenges, and if we just go for a tick box approach to auditing in the establishment phase of the department, we will be missing a lot of the real issues that the audit committee could support us around should they get a better understanding of what our key challenges are. So I think, Chairperson, Honourable Members, I'd like to hand over to Mr. Matsomela, because I think we have tried to engage in most of the questions, and he'll add and fill in.
Thanks, Chairperson. Firstly, I wish to apologize. The correct percentage of economic development is 26, not 20 as it is. That zero should have been 6. I apologize for the computation. And the other questions that have been raised related to the security vetting. Currently, in terms of our recruitment process, before we can bring anybody on board, we subject the candidates through what we call personal suitability checks. Personal suitability checks is DTI has secured the service of the service provider. We give them the basic information. They do the reference checks. They check the criminal records of the people and credit worthiness as well. So by the time we take the person on board, we've got that particular report, and at least we are able to continue with the appointment. There have been cases where we put people through the process and we didn't appoint them because there were red flags in terms of saying either their qualifications are not authentic and those particular issues. So those processes are in place. We are full aware of the fact that the security vetting process takes a little bit of time because it has to go through the SAPS and national security as well at the end of the day to ensure issues relating to citizenship and so forth. So, but for now, for us to be able to recruit people a bit faster, we're using the service provider to be able to get the information that could allow us to be able to open people from scratch. In terms of the recruitment, I think those are the only two issues that I think that DG didn't really cover much. Thank you for that. I just wanted to address those ones.
Thank you very much. Can we, I would want to believe we should be coming to a close of this area, but just in case my observation is not correct, I will see if there is a hand rising. Otherwise, I will move that we end this session. On behalf of the committee, you wish to raise something?
Within time. It's not actually a question, but a comment on the transformation, process. It's really not a good picture to look at. When you look at the assistants and the deputies, you see a number of Africans, especially women, being higher than in other levels. And the grade below here, if we can get a consistent pattern, like the breakdown in terms of race and gender, so that we see which sector or maybe racial group in terms of being permanent and on contract, must never lose the point of trying to narrow the gap, but the grid here doesn't really talk to that satisfactorily. That's my comment.
Did you?
Well, I think it is a comment. We'll certainly take it seriously and look at that at the breakdown. And in the current round we're going into, we'll just have to put in place targets to make sure that we address those concerns.
Thanks, DG and the team. Thanks for having attended and responded and presented and also engaged with the members. You may now be excused from the meeting. The rest of the committee members, we will remain to proceed, but we'll take a short break. Let's take a short break so that when we come back, we then look into the adoption, discussing the report and adopting the report, possibly. When we started, I did not acknowledge Buhle, who is running around helping us here, and also from the media people, I did not acknowledge Sharon Dura from Idasa, and also Mr. Abdul Patel joined us late. Thank you very much. Let's have a small break.